Right. So as we just heard about in Aoife's talk, to lowest order objects in GR move on geodesics. So we have this very simple equation. Well, simple equation, but interesting consequences of it. But in this talk, I want to go a little bit beyond this. And there are, roughly speaking, two types of corrections. The first of which is the sort of traditional subject of the CAPRA conferences, is self-interaction. So some massive object produces metric perturbations and then acts back on the body and produces a change in the motion. And in some sense, this isn't really a change in the geodesic law so much as it is a addition of fine print. So one still moves along a geodesic, but one then just has to be a little bit more careful about which metric you are moving along a geodesic. So at least in some sort of very simple schematic sense, the only thing that really changes here is, in order to incorporate self-force, is that you change your derivative operator. Okay, so that's there's a lot of details that are hidden in that statement. I don't want to get into that. That's not the topic of this talk. Rather, what I want to do is to talk about the other type of correction to the geodesic law, which is, or the other class of corrections, which are related to extended body effects. So objects move along geodesics when their size is, roughly speaking, much smaller than all external length scales. And if you want to know, well, what are the corrections, if you look more closely at things, well, these involve the object spin, as Aoife also briefly mentioned. But also there are corrections due to internal structure, for example, due to an object's quadrupole moment. Okay, so just to describe briefly what these external effects look like, what do they do to the equations of motion? One useful thing in all of this is to sort of enlarge the way that you describe the object that you're interested in, so you don't anymore have just the position z, as you did with the geodesic equation. But you want to supplement this with not only a position, but with a linear momentum, an angular momentum, and depending on how much internal structure you want to take into account, perhaps other things, perhaps a quadrupole moment, perhaps an octupole moment, and so on. And okay, so you have this way of describing the state of your object, and then you want to know how does this evolve, how do these variables evolve into the future? And as has been known since the 70s, was worked out by Dixon, there are basically first order universal, roughly speaking, universal first order evolution equations, at least for these three variables. So your rate of change of position is given, at least once you specify a spin supplementary condition. Your rate of change of linear momentum is given. Your rate of change of angular momentum is given. All of these things depend on internal structure, so they depend on quadrupole moment and so on. But one thing that I didn't include here was actually an evolution equation for the internal structure itself. And the reason for that is because there isn't one, or there isn't one without making additional assumptions. So if you have a very particular type of body that you're interested in, you can say that, well, its internal structure behaves in a particular manner. But if you sort of reverse the logic a little bit and you think about, well, suppose that you want to consider internal structure that's doing something. Does there exist a body whose internal structure does, you know, whatever you might specify? And the answer is, well, pretty much, yeah. The laws of physics don't really forbid any evolution equation that you might want, with some minor caveats. So you could sort of try to take this to an extreme and say, suppose that we have we vary our internal structure, and we can do this, we can vary in pretty much however we want. Suppose that we have an actual, let's say, spacecraft, which has been engineered to rearrange internal masses in some way to make its quadrupole moment do whatever we want. So can we, for example, produce an arbitrary external force? If we have some clever mechanism, can we produce an arbitrary external torque, an arbitrary torque? So here I say, can you, just by rearranging masses, waving your hands around or whatever, push yourself in that direction or twist yourself around this axis? And the answer is essentially, if something is not forbidden, you can probably do it. Okay, so what do I mean by forbidden, things are basically forbidden by symmetries. And one thing which has been known basically since all of this was first formulated in a clear way back in the 70s, is that if you have a killing field, you have a conservation law. This is true not only for geodesics, it's true not only at pole-dipole level, it's true no matter how much internal structure you have. In fact, it's exact. And every one of those conservation laws, it turns out, implies a particular constraint on the force and torque. So no matter how clever your internal mechanisms, no matter how you wave your hands around, there's a certain force and torque component which can't be changed for every killing field that you have. So that's a restriction. That's something that's forbidden. So it turns out that actually killing fields are not the only things which provide constraints. There are also other types of symmetries which constrain forces and torques. And in fact, Killing-Yano tensors will do this. And not only ordinary Killing-Yano tensors, but even conformal ones. So in Kerr, actually, you have two killing fields. So you have two constraints from that. But you also have two conformal Killing-Yano tensors. So you actually have four constraints on four Killing-Yano tensors. Are actually the Killing-Yano tensors are actually doubling the number of constraints that you have. Okay. So that's kind of saying, you know, how can you vary the equations of motion? If you have some complicated internal mechanism, can you change the rate of change of linear momentum, the rate of change of angular momentum? But that doesn't immediately tell you how you can change the solutions to those equations. Can you, for example, find some dramatic change in the trajectory of an object? So let me look at a simple example and say that we're in Schwarzschild. We're moving around on this small circular orbit here. You know, imagine you're on a spacecraft, you've run out of fuel for your rocket, you're moving around on this orbit. Can you get home? Are you stuck? So can you escape from this orbit just by, you know, let's say, just using internal deformations? And the answer, perhaps surprisingly, is yes. So on every orbit, basically, you can pump up your eccentricity. And you do it just a little bit each time, but your eccentricity gets larger and larger and larger, and eventually you can escape. Okay, so how do you, going into a little more detail, how does this happen? Or what is one way that you can use to do this? You can use extended body effects to basically control your mass, to vary your mass. So this might seem a little bit exotic, but if you're used to thinking about, if you have any experience dealing with, let's say, scalar charges, objects coupled to scalar fields, you might recall that the equation of motion there allows for mass changes already at monopole order. But it turns out that in ordinary electromagnetism, well, this doesn't happen at monopole order, but you do get mass changes at dipole order. And in fact, so if you have something with a magnetic dipole moment, its mass will in general change. In gravity, you have to go to quadruple order for this to happen. But there's nothing exotic about it. Masses change. Okay, so how does that help you? I said that you have conservation laws for all of your killing fields. So here we're in Schwarzschild. We have a conserved energy. We have a conserved angular momentum. That's still true, even with extended body effects. But it's not the energy itself which determines, let's say, a Schwarzschild geodesic, or contributes to a Schwarzschild geodesic, but rather it's the energy per unit mass and the angular momentum per unit mass. Usually there's no distinction between these, or just a trivial distinction, because the mass is constant when you're dealing with actual geodesics. But here, if you can change the mass, you can change this ratio, E over M, J over M. And this allows you to change the motion. Okay. So one thing that you might object to, or if you first think about this, is to say, okay, well, extended body effects are usually very small. So you might imagine, okay, the mass changes, but maybe it just sort of wiggles about some average. And okay, you can have some tiny correction from this, but so what? You can't actually, you know, escape from a circular orbit, because that would require large mass change. Well, you can have large mass changes. And the idea is that you can sort of think of this as setting up a resonance. But the idea is that you make sure that sort of on each orbit, you change the mass a little bit in the appropriate direction, then the next orbit a little bit more, next orbit a little bit more, and so on, and over a long time. you can produce a large change in mass and a large change in your orbit. So the way to think about this is you can kind of view this diagram as something like analogous to a thermodynamic diagram, which describes the state of a heat engine. But here I have on the vertical axis the curvature, the horizontal axis appropriate component of a quadrupole moment. And if you're on an eccentric orbit, you move between a maximum curvature and a minimum curvature. And you could ask, well, how does the quadrupole vary as you move between those two radii? And this plots out some curve in this diagram. The change in mass is then the area enclosed by this curve. So as long as you design your quadrupole moment to have a non-zero area, you're going to have a finite change in mass. And if you maintain this over many cycles, you can have a large change in mass. And doing this, well, you can do lots of things. You can escape from a circular orbit, as I said before. If you have an eccentric orbit, you can go the other way. You can circularize it. You can control your precession rate. So you can say, all right, I don't want to just escape in some random direction, but I want to escape over there because that's where home is or something like that. You can also stabilize ordinarily unstable orbits. So let's say circular orbits below ISCO. You can do lots and lots of things using extended body effects. Okay, just to wrap up, forces and torques can be manipulated almost arbitrarily, at least in terms of directions, if not magnitude, just by having appropriate internal structures. And essentially anything is allowed except where forbidden by symmetries. And if you arrange things in the right way, if you time things in the right way, you can actually qualitatively control the motion even with small effects. And one way you can do this is by changing your mass, but there are many more effects than this. But I'll just end there.
Thanks, Abe, for a very nice talk. Just on time for your questions. Do we have any questions in the chat? Yes, Georgios.
Okay, it's somehow puzzling because you can always choose with respect to your spin supplementary condition what kind of mass is conserved. So why should I choose the one that is not? So if I have Sturcev Dixon, I could use the for momentum contraction. Why should I use the contraction with respect to the four velocity in order to make it the specific energy to make it and not conserve quantity?
So what I mean by this is the norm of the momentum. I'm going beyond dipole order. So I'm including quadrupole effects here.
So quadrupole effects at order of the spin, spin square, or arbitrary?
So actually the example that I was giving you, so you can generalize this, but it was with the spin set to zero and the quadrupole moment controlled in order to keep the torque zero. And then there's one extra degree of freedom, and that allows you to control the motion via the mass.
Okay.
So there will generically be changes beyond dipole order.
I think, if I remember correctly, the masses are not dependent on the how far you will go with the multiple expansion. So that they depend on the, but I might be mistaken.
Yeah, they do depend.
Okay.
So you can make mass constant at dipole order, but beyond that, you can't, except in special cases.
Okay, thanks.
We have time for probably one quick question, if anybody else has one. Okay, I can ask quickly. I'm just wondering, so this is a cumulative effect, you said. Is this something that genuinely happens in like a finite proper time, or does it have to?
Yeah, so it takes a finite proper time, and I guess I was, in this diagram, I was, taking this extreme example of an engineered object where you're kind of switching discretely between two states at apocenter and pericenter. But if you have some sort of naturally occurring object where you have some sort of Love number relation between curvature and quadrupole moment, well, if it's just an instantaneous algebraic relation, as people usually do, you'll just get a line on this diagram and there's no no enclosed area. But if you include a delay, as would occur in a real system, so due to dissipation or whatever, then you do get an enclosed area and you do get these kinds of effects, to some degree at least.